from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the Good Atheist Podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Now, for those of you that were wondering if I backslid too much in my scheduled podcasts, I'd like to first apologize for anyone who's getting the show a little bit late. But I got to tell you, after my whole trip back from the Reason Rally, I was exhausted. I just couldn't do anything. I didn't want to just look at the computer. I didn't want to write anything. It's like, goodbye world, I'm disconnecting for a couple of days because I just need some me fucking time. And it turns out that I was pretty lucky because my mom left for a day and a half to go help her friend while she's moving. So I got a just day for me. You know, like a me day?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I needed a me day. I needed actually two. I've intended on having the show Friday. Unfortunately, the show's up Sunday. But the cool thing about it is it's a two-parter, this show. So we have the first segment, which is answering an email from a fan that I think we just have to answer. And the second is David Bonney, who is behind a project called Atheist Shoes. This is a sort of like kind of the new thing that I'm trying to do here. I don't want to make interviews be the whole show. I kind of want to just have interviews be a part of the show, right? So I can just include stuff in the middle. And my idea now is just to include so many more interviews. I'm just going to be squeezing them in. I have a new book publisher that's sending me lots of stuff. And I've got like so many interviews lined up now. I'm just having to figure out what's the order. Like, I got Deborah Feldman, who wrote a book called Unorthodox, The Shocking Rejection of My Hasidic Roots, who I'm going to be getting on the show shortly. We also have Richard Carrier, who's written a number of books. He has a new one on Christianity. I've been meaning to interview this guy for like 5 years, maybe, or maybe even longer. And I don't know. Just the list just goes on and on and on. There's lots more people. Plus, a fan of the show got in touch. Turns out to be like a very talented musician from the band Plush Gun. And I'm going to have him on the show, too, because he's going to help me write a new intro song. It's going to jazz it up, folks. We're going to just sexify it a little bit. All those of you that are fans of it and be like, don't change anything? Yeah. We're changing stuff.
Exciting times.
We are living in exciting times, my friend. But before we start the show and do the interview, I do want to mention that I'm probably not the only one that's run down. You look, sir, like you drank too much last night, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Were you just celebrating the love of stout? I mean, spring is in the air. Are you feeling a little bit like, you know, maybe the sun is gone? It's time to go out again, have some fun?
No, I just drank a little. That's all. Nothing special about it.
Yeah, nothing special about it. Well, hopefully you're going to be conscious enough to answer the next question that I have, because you know what? Here's the thing. I wasn't even sure if I was going to mention on the show. Do you ever get the feeling like you don't know what you're doing and you're kind of like secretly worried that the people that are listening to the sound of your voice are incensed to do things that are completely crazy? Do you ever get that idea? Like, that maybe the shit that we say, someone's actually taking it pretty seriously?
I fear that would be a fearful thing.
Well, it's bound to happen, right? And so much of our audience is very young. You know, they're teenagers or people who are just sort of going from their teenage years to their very confusing, exciting, terrifying young adult years. And with that, I have a letter from Brittany, who's been a longtime listener of the show. And I believe she was one of the recipients of the Broke-Ass Scholarship, although I'm not quite sure if it's the same one. Anyways, lots of Britneys. I guess it's a name down south for young girls. So she has a letter. I got to read the whole thing, and hopefully we're not going to do anything horrible. It says, "Dear Jake, hi there. My name is Brittany. I'm 18 years old, and I live in northeastern Florida. I've recently come across a problem that I'm not sure how to deal with. I'm graduating high school in a few months. The college search has been coming along so far. My best friend and I are are in an obnoxiously large rut in our friendship, as her newfound religious beliefs and our differing ideas regarding college. Because of her, I agreed to at least apply for a school of her choice in hopes that we may, that maybe if we compromise, we could go to college together. So it sounds familiar, sort of high school friend, are starting to have some troubles because of religion and choosing of colleges. Okay, now it goes, there's more. Apparently, she's beginning to wear away at her friendship by constantly trying to have coming to Jesus moments with me or inviting me with sickly cheeriness in front of all my friends to each and every one of her church events. She knows I'm an atheist and will use every chance she gets to make me feel uncomfortable or attacked. Needless to say, I'm having severe doubts as to whether or not I will be able to continue our friendship. While I was laboring under the delusion of this possibility, however, I applied to a college of her choice out of fairness, Samford University, a Southern Baptist Christian college. I feel a bittersweet mix of excitement and annoyance that I was accepted, mainly because it meant my friend will never stop pestering me about going with her. It's even harder to ignore this option in my career college when they offered me a $38,000 scholarship. My family is doing all right, but we're basically relying on scholarship and student loans to get me through college. I feel like Samford is my only real choice, even though it could put me in a situation that would make me unhappy, and further advance the severe anxiety problems I've been associated to religion. I know something isn't right. I've tried telling my mom, but she doesn't think it's an issue and won't even look into getting me help. You may recognize me from the time I emailed about my family staging an atheist intervention unannounced, which amplified my anxiety issues. All this considered, it's virtually a free 4 years for my undergrad if I can find a way to manage going there. I have no idea what to do and could really use some advice.
Well, sounds like there's a lot of pressure on this person to convert.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of pressure now. I mean, she's talking about one of those interventions. One of the shows that I'm going to be doing is actually about a place where they essentially kidnap kids and send them to these retreats. One of them is in Dominican Republic, and the other one is in Jamaica. And there they essentially use crazy psychological warfare tactics, extreme labor and duress to try to reconvert people back to the faith. It's quite scary. And there's lots of stories that pop up once in a while in Reddit's forum from someone saying like, oh yeah, I escaped from there, no big deal and all, except for I was kidnapped. So there's definitely, when you're already in that environment, this is tough. And you know what? Here's the truth. I'm a little bit conflicted about the answer because there are different kinds of me. Let's say that there's the atheist me that wants to be on a soapbox and just be like, I want everyone to shout from the rooftop their atheism and fuck anyone who can't deal with that shit. Go fuck yourselves. You know, that guy. He's president real. And then, of course, he realizes that, how can a person deal with the aftermath of that, right? And how is that different from the crazy shit that Jesus was saying when he was like, abandon your families if they don't believe what you believe? Jeez, it sounds creepily like that, right? Mm-hmm. Problem is, I guess, the religion itself makes that demand on people, where if you don't believe, you're the one that's going to be cast outside of it. And in a way, your own thoughts or belief system makes you, you know, hinge on that knife's edge. The crazy thing about this Samford College, by the way, is if you look at their history, their association with the Southern Baptist Christian College. Well, you know, part of that association was back in the early 1950s. These Southern Baptists used to argue for segregation under the premise that it was a cultural thing, that the Bible supported slavery and they supported its ideals. Does this sound familiar? I just want to just put it out there here. Yeah, it should. Of course someone's going to defend their sickening culture if it sucks. And, you know, the new version now is like, well, homosexuality or women doing things with their bodies, this violates my religious freedom to tell you how to live your life. And unfortunately for us, Brittany lives in this environment. So what what advice can I possibly give to a person who is given an option of somewhat of a free education? And let's face the reality in the U.S. about the real cost of education, okay? It's the new form of economic serfdom, people. I mean, I'm talking to fans who have left their university with the anticipation that in 30 years' time, when they've finished paying off their debt, they've paid double the principal. You know, that often that is the value of a house, right? You are now beholden to the financiers of the world as a young person trying to educate yourself, trying to have the minimum to just have a job, and competing against a world which is becoming more educated but for less money, where, you know, high-tech jobs are moving overseas, where someone has the same education, but it costs them $2,000, not $120,000 to educate. So what kind of advice can I give also in that world? Like, I don't know what to say, you know what I mean? I can definitely tell you that if you go with this plan, you will be miserable. Like, I can't possibly imagine the kind of situation where, yeah, sure, you mean you can talk yourself into it, but...
Well, is Stanford like a Liberty University type place? Is it like the Falwell University? Is it because it's Southern Baptist, does that mean it's going to be literally full of Baptists and nothing else?
It's difficult to tell. I mean, I was trying to do a little bit of research on it. I was actually hoping that I was going to get some stories from it. You know, like someone saying, hey, this was my experience here. That's really hard to find. I generally don't see that as a good sign, though. You know, it's a suppression of information. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, I don't know if it's that bad. I don't want to speak on whether or not it's bad. I think a person would have to visit and make that assumption for themselves. Like,
I have a hard time seeing how it would be worse. You know, how this university will be worse than the situation she's already in, where her family already intervened to try and force her to become religion. And her best friend is constantly trying to convert her as well. It sounds like she's already pretty deep in this whole crazy Bible Belt ridiculousness already.
Well, look, I mean, my first bit of advice, I suppose, is, like, I think take a step back. Number one is, I got some bad news about your friend, okay? Your friend is the equivalent of a drug addict now. All they can think about is fucking their next fix. And you know what their fix is? Trying to convert people over to their drug. And their drug is Jesus. And their drug is really just... It requires that a person ignore reality. You know? It's like, hey, I'm not going to accept the world as it is. No, no, no. I'm going to think that a big daddy in the sky is there to just make everything okay. And I need everyone in the room with me to believe in exactly the same thing. This creepy cult, by the way, has been around forever. It's a fucking plague. And once it gets a hold of you, it requires a lot of thinking to get out of it. And people generally don't tend to like to do a lot of that when they just launch themselves right into it. And at first, I mean, I'd say that the drug lasts about as long as most, you know, most drug romances. So you're looking at probably like a year or two of someone really going through the hard fucking, oh yeah, this is so good. Have you tried Jesus, man? But eventually the dopamine wears off a little bit, and then they start seeing some of the hypocrisy in their own world and their own life and shit like that, and they don't feel very satisfied, so they become kind of bitter. But at the beginning, when you're just an idealistic idiot, you're only going to see the best of it, and you're going to be just totally drugged up on that shit. So I'm really sorry to tell you this, but your friend is just over the deep end, and I don't know what to do, tell you other than run away. Run away as far as you fucking possibly can from this person. Going to university with him also, by the way, sounds like a special kind of nightmare. I mean, you think she's cheery now. In her mind, she's probably thinking, as long as I'm super happy about Jesus, she's going to see how happy I am, and she's going to want to come to Jesus, even though I have lots of fucking other problems, but I don't want to be genuine anymore about it because I have to show face. Does that sound like the kind of friendship that you want to fucking pursue?
Oh, it would be nice if it was a situation where she was just like, I'm going to lead a happy life and show her how the love of Jesus transformed me, and maybe she'll convert. It doesn't sound like that's the situation. If that was the situation, it would be a good situation. It sounds more like every chance she gets, she tries to proselytize And that's annoying. And it sucks. It sounds like Brittany doesn't really have the option to just say, look, don't fucking try to convert me. If we're going to be friends, that's like a rule. It's like you have to respect that. And it doesn't sound like it's a situation where her friend does that. So that kind of blows.
Well, you know, I could give you more depressing news. I mean, as you grow older, friendships begin to wither and die until only really the core friends, the ones that sort of like mattered more than anything else, remain. And there is a culling. I mean, it doesn't happen for a while, though. You can enjoy your fast friends, but it's when push comes to fucking shove that you find out who, you know, who the real ones are. And you get a couple episodes like that, and, you know, it really tightens up the little circle. I'd say, really, who you have in there, though, I mean, there is something that you can say for history, but generally speaking, you always have to make sure that the friendship is something where both parties are getting something out of it. That's what a friendship is, you know? It's not one person taking care of someone else. It's two people taking care of each other. And if it's not, like, a give and take kind of thing anymore, then it's not a friendship. It's just you trying to maintain some kind of history. And like, you know, that's all it is. It is a memory in the past. It doesn't fucking exist. It exists to the point that you choose for it to exist, in a sense. I mean, how real would that history be if you were legitimately hit in the head and had amnesia and you forgot the person? It's like it wouldn't exist. Poof. Gone. There you go. Your friend is now a distant memory. Oh, yes, we were real close before that happened. I had a similar friendship with someone back in CJEB. She later went to Peru to, like, convert people and shit like that. Yeah, that was unfortunate. I couldn't talk her out of that one. She was convinced, though, that they were going to do, you know, other stuff other than proselytizing. Oh, it's not just going to be that. Yeah, you're not gonna dangle a chicken in front of a kid saying like love Jesus, love Jesus, or you can't have any chicken. It's a fair deal. Well, you know, the other thing too, I might want to give you as a piece of advice, and this goes back to the economic serfdom of students, is I'm not entirely sure that the deal that we're making with society, you know, as young people transitioning to adulthood, that deal saying, check it out, I'm going to go to school and get a degree and you get me a good job. And, like, that deal is kind of falling apart on folks. So the scary thing now is sort of the new deal is get a degree or else you're going to be poor forever or else you can't do anything now. You were gonna work at McDonald's.
Sounds about right.
That's scary. That's for me is frightening. That's what I call the new economic serfdom, where we're beholden to the moneylenders now because we need to exalt ourselves to a particular stage to be middle class. Now it's pretty fucked up.
Maybe you want to look at it more like this: college and university are kind of like reality shows that we all enter into, and the winners are the people who get the best marks because they win six-figure jobs. So it's kind of a game like that. Life is like a game.
Well, it's, you know, it really does feel like a reality show because it feels totally fixed and rigged from the get-go. Like French universities. God, what a fucking nepotistic fucking system that is. Ridiculous. At least it's not quite as bad as that around here, but still, I mean, it is a lot of who you know in this world. Who you know. And I guess the other problem, too, is in a sense, like the way that schools have been essentially designed is a track, right? You get, depending on where you're able to go, will be this particular track that you can just walk on and hopefully leads you down a particular road, of course, you know. Like all tracks, it's quite bumpy, and there are no guarantees in life except for death and taxes. But, you know, for the most part, it feels like most of us are really falling onto the side of this track. And I'm like, you know, what advice would I give someone? I'm like, my advice for you right now is simple. It has nothing to do with getting a diploma. I'm not saying either get one or don't get one. All I can tell you is please be as educated as possible, okay? That is my only piece of advice. educate yourself. Now, she was asking, is there anyone that I can talk to about this? My advice about that is talk to the Secular Student Alliance and then maybe find out if there are some schools that offer, you know, groups and programs within religious schools, because that's what they do. They try to set up branches, support groups, and things like that. So if you're going to find a place, I'd say that that's probably a good start, and at the very least, they can give you some advice. I wish there was more. If there is more, maybe somebody can let me know, but I did try to do quite a bit of research on that. We're still very small as a group. You know, if anybody had the brilliant idea of starting a fund for scholarships and things like that, I'm like, go nuts. Go nuts. Because as far as I understand, apart from the Jessica Ahlquist thing, there was like a out of nowhere, these don't exist. And hopefully in the future they will exist. That's dependent on us, of course.
Oh, you know, we kind of said we haven't seen that much about Sanford. We don't know exactly what the deal is. So, I mean, I guess one of the important things that you got to do is you got to find out what the deal is with Sanford. I'm sure there's ways that you can go down there, see what it's like, see whether or not it's crazy religious or whether or not it's just a little bit religious, in which case it sounds like basically what you've been living in for the majority of your life. If it is super fundamental and you know that you'd be miserable there, consider this. Take another year. Apply to a bunch more colleges. I don't believe that Sanford would be the only place that you can get a scholarship like that from. If you're getting that big of a scholarship, other schools will give it to you. You just might have to take a little bit more time to find the right one.
Well, you're obviously smart since you listen to the show. So, you know, right there. Scholarship guaranteed? You know, it's weird. Tomorrow, I don't know if this is actually going to make next week's show, but tomorrow I'm supposed to be doing an interview with someone in high school who's basically doing a project, who's chosen to interview someone about their career, and that person is me. So I'm going to tell them about my my career doing this. So that's why I said I don't know if that's actually going to make a show. But if it's funny, it will. It will be on the show if that's hilarious. If not, it will be one of those. I wonder how that went.
If you lay it out and all of a sudden you realize it's depressing and awful. Oh, God.
Well, there was a post on the forum because he wanted to get fans to ask, you know, their questions, because I was going to answer. I'm going to try to answer all of his questions. Yep. and the whatever other crazy personal ones or things that I haven't really thought of answering, whatever the hell it is. But you know, the forums being new, barely got a blip, so it'll be his questions that I'll be answering, and that's tomorrow. So there's no way to get the word out. By the time everybody hears this, it'll already be too late. This is in the past. This has already happened.
So look forward to that.
Look forward to that thing that already happened in the future. Okay, you know what? We're going to take a short break, and then when we come back, my interview with David Bonney. Today, I have a very special guest who contacted me just last night, and I figured to myself, I need to do an emergency show, because as it turns out, there is a deadline. It is another one of these great Kickstarter programs that I'm just throwing as much support as I can, because this one, we really need to pay attention to this. I've been talking about this for a few shows, saying we need to, people need to come out more. We need to be more vocal about our non-belief. We need to force people to acknowledge our goddamn existence. And there's someone who's come along and figured out a perfect solution to this. And I have him on Skype right now for an interview. His name is David Bonney, and I'd like to welcome him to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Now, first of all, I want you to explain what is your idea, because I think that just, you know, it's fascinating. Everybody needs to know about it. So what is the idea?
Okay, the idea is atheist shoes. So shoes for atheists. And that's it, really. It's quite a strange idea, I admit, but me and a friend had the idea to make some shoes for Christians at one point with water in the sole, so you could walk on water like Jesus. But, you know, that was just a little gag. And then we thought, well, atheist shoes actually had a great potential to make atheism a little bit more visible, but in a nice, subtle way. And, yeah.
Well, for those people who are not who didn't go to the site and look at the graphic that I put up for it, the atheism part of the shoe, if you want, apart from the sleek designs that you have available, that's me pimping you out, has the sole with the it says "Ich bin atheist," right? At least, I mean, you are German. That's
absolutely.
That's what it says. Although, you know what, I kind of like the German part. I don't even want, if you know, if I have them, I don't want them in English. I think German's fine.
I know. I think German is classier somehow. And
It is. I feel like, you know, ich bin ein Berliner. You know, like I feel I am an atheist, just like I am a Berliner.
Tapping into a heritage there. Yeah, we thought about that. But yeah, that's the idea. We decided that having these shoes with kind of funny, witty slogans on the sole that leave marks when you walk along would be a nice kind of way to declare your godlessness to the world, but without it being like some coarse, grotesque T-shirt kind of pushing it down people's throats. And if you're sitting in a cafe or a restaurant and you just put your foot over your knee, you know, you can subtly show off to any atheists around that you're there, and maybe they'll come over and say hello to you. It's, I don't know, there's just something quite peculiar and postmodern about an atheist shoe, and so I just had to do it when I had the idea.
Well, there is something pleasant, I think, about the way that that's being introduced. I think, though, another thing I find quite pleasant about this as well is that it is very much an insult in many Islamic countries to show the sole of your foot.
Exactly.
And it has that.
We did think about that afterwards, and I'm fully expecting the Iranians to issue a fatwa against me. It's actually in the marketing plan. But
that would definitely be a hell of a newsletter. Get your fatwa shoes.
Yes, but it was not intended as an insult, of course.
Well, no. I mean, again, I mean, it's kind of like one of those subtle cultural things that anything's probably going to be an insult. I mean, thumbs up somewhere is an insult. That's a fuck you in many countries.
Yes, absolutely. you can't win. Yeah.
No. There's no universal sign that is a declaration of awesomeness, except maybe the peace sign, although I still think that probably not.
I don't know. The Japanese, the British use that sign differently. It's who knows? Yeah, and then it's got Churchill, and you know that might piss off some former Soviets. You never know. Yeah.
Everyone's always going to be offended.
Of course.
Now, what is exactly your background? Where do you come from, and how did you sort of like get to making shoes?
Right. Well, I'm not quite sure. It all happened quite by accident, I think. I was born in Ireland, in Dublin, and I studied psychology for many years. But then in my mid-20s, I sold out and went into the advertising industry. And I spent 5 or 6 years in London doing that. And it very quickly sickened me. And no, it's a great industry, great people. But I just kind of ran out of curiosity about the industry and felt that the kind of brands I was working with weren't really doing, they were kind of wrong-headed. You know, it was product before brand. And a lot of them were talking about causes and about doing something for the greater good. And I had this idea that if advertising agencies stopped working with companies and started working by gathering consumers together to create brands that that served their own values, that there could be something very interesting in this. So I'm going into the theory of advertising a lot now. But basically, I left London with my German girlfriend at the time and moved to Berlin just to take a bit of a sabbatical. And that's where I kind of happened upon the idea to do atheist shoes with an artist friend of mine. And it sounded bizarre at first, but the more we thought about it, the more we thought it could actually be a big thing. And I made friends with a local shoemaker here called Julia, who's just a wonderful person and has taught me everything I know about shoemaking. And we made some prototypes, and we did that very quickly. And my God, the designs and the prototypes looked great, and I just had to tell atheists about it. It's actually atheist shoes that has turned me into a shoemaker rather than me being a shoemaker who then had the idea to make atheist shoes.
It's interesting that shoemaking becomes a calling.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it feels great. I couldn't get further away from advertising. I used to sell things like VW and Marmite and Budweiser, and now I'm making stuff. It's a bizarre transition, and I'm really struggling to get used to it, but it's a wonderful thing.
Now, the thing that really inspired you at first was that you put a post on Reddit.
Yes.
And that exploded. Now, I want to tell you one thing, though, first. Now, anyone who knows me knows that I troll Reddit like a maniac. And I do remember seeing what you had put. And I remember specifically, I kind of browsed past it only because, in retrospect, when I look at it, the picture that was there made your shoes look awful.
What was the picture, I wonder?
It was very yellowy. It just had the two shoes on it, but it was just – I don't know. There was something just, I guess when it looked in when it was small, it's just kind of my eyebrows passed it. But it wasn't until I kind of looked at them that I realized, hey, I really like this design. Like I guess that turned the page for me, because you go from saying like, all right, here's an idea that a person can have and that's all fucking well and good, but you got to show me something that I think is going to be cool, to all of a sudden being like, shit, this is fucking cool.
Mm. No, you have to blame Fabian, my friend, for his dodgy iPhone skills. He's responsible for all the photos so far. But
iPhone photo. See, this is probably where we get into a lot of trouble here, huh? This is we got to do better than that.
No, absolutely. But the design, to be honest, I didn't know I was a good designer of shoes until I designed these shoes, and I think I've happened upon something which could stand in its own right. So if you cut the atheism out of the equation, I basically tried to design the shoe I've wanted for years and was never able to make, and or never able to find in the shops, and I made it, and a lot of people seem to like it. Like, some of the coolest uberist hipsters in Berlin and Stockholm love this shoe, and even some of them are Christians and they're dying to wear it, so that's got to be a good sign.
Well, your shoe is going to definitely help convert some – or deconvert some people, excuse me.
Yes.
And so it does have that advantage. And you know what? I can definitely hear you when you say, like, well, you wanted to have a shoe that you didn't think is being made. And the interesting thing that we have, I think, in today's society is a rebirth, if you want, of certain artisanal skills that we thought were really dead.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, who did you think that shoemaking could be a career?
No, never, never. I didn't think anything in fashion could ever be my career. I've always admired it from a distance. I used to work in a clothes shop as a teenager, but no, not for me. And I think I found the only functioning shoemaker in Berlin who happens to be this really cool girl in her late 20s. It's really a stroke of luck.
Now, you know, there's only one shoe now that I need made, because your shoes are great. But if you could get me that version, like the sole thing, and it looked like one of those shoes they used to have in like the 1930s, 40s, you know, like those shoes were awesome.
No, it depends. They had a lot of shoes in the 30s and 40s.
Okay, well, let me give you an example. The kinds that Indiana Jones wears. I love his shoes.
Oh, yes, yes.
That's Indiana Jones had great shoes. I can't find that shoe anymore. They don't make those shoes.
That's funny you mention Indiana Jones. I always thought I want to make the shoe that Indiana Jones could wear in a cabaret in Berlin in 2030. I want to make a timeless shoe. Our shoes have been kind of inspired a little bit by the ones Jesse Owens wore in the 36 Olympics. So we're not far away time era wise, but they're definitely more of a sneaker than a classic Indiana Jones shoe. That's true.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to complain and say you got to change your strategy. I'm saying that, you know, for me, if I had that shoe, but it had that, because I really love the font on the sole and the way that it just looks. I think it's sleek and great. And I'm like, let me tell you, your shoes right now are on, for me, they're on a 9. I want them. Obviously, I think that people see and they're going to want them too. The Indiana Jones shoe, that's a 10. That's
right. I'm going to look into that immediately. That sounds convincing enough.
Yeah, you make that and like forever, I will never be able to stop talking about the man who gave me Indiana Jones's atheist shoe.
Excellent. I'm sure Indiana Jones was an atheist as well.
Well, he would have to be. I mean, like the way he used to talk about religion, although the funny thing is in his universe, that shit's real.
Yes.
So in a way, if he's an atheist, he's an idiot.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, he had aliens and everything, didn't he? Yeah.
No, that movie didn't happen, David.
Okay, we strike that from the record.
That's not canon. You know what it is? It's pseudographia, I think. Is that what it's called? Anyway, there's a particular thing in religion where even they will say that certain texts are definitely not part of, like, the official canon.
Right.
Well, we have the same thing with Indiana Jones, and that's the fourth movie. So what is, like, you're still kind of in development in terms of the idea, right? You're going on Kickstarter. You're saying, we want to start this shoe. But at the same time, like, you're thinking to yourself, this can be a real company. And you've decided so far, at least I've seen, it's called The Meaningful Shoe Company. Now, why did you choose that name?
The Meaningful Shoe Company. Well, we had to register some company name, and I did it in the UK because I don't want to get into German tax situations because I can't speak German yet. But The Meaningful Shoe Company, I don't know, it sounded nice, and I could have registered the company as atheist, but I thought, well, who knows, maybe one day I'll want to make non-atheist shoes or something post-atheist, I don't know. I'd make enough shoes for Christians if they bought them, you know.
But there is something meaningful that you've decided to attach to the value of the company.
Yes, I have made a product which is meaningful in and of itself. It's a good-looking shoe, but it's also a statement about the wearer. But also the company and our objectives have this kind of altruistic angle as well, in that any of the money we make, we want to somehow use to kind of seed back into secular causes and charities. I mean, not all of it, obviously. We have to live and survive. But
survive and still, like, do well for yourself. You should not be living in fear from paycheck to paycheck.
No. There's nothing wrong with profit. There's nothing wrong with the paycheck. No,
absolutely not. But I believe that, I mean, it sounds like what you're doing is a bit more of a social enterprise rather than...
Exactly. Care. That's the term I was about to say. Exactly. And it goes back to all these theoretical ramblings I was making in the ad industry a few years back. I mean, the perfect company for me is one which grows from this groundswell of support of like-minded people, and that's kind of where we are now, and then somehow feeds back to support that cause in a very active way. So we would like to support some secular causes like Médecins Sans Frontières in a more generalistic sense, but there's also causes that we find interesting, like the elimination of female genital mutilation in Africa. Which, you know, is that the fault of religion? Is it not? It's a moot issue. It's a very worthwhile cause to support. And it's tapping into this whole good without God movement, which we think is very important.
Well, I think it fulfills a number of goals. I mean, I think that in the future anyways, if companies want to survive, they do have to adopt many of these principles of social enterprise, which is something that I think people are going to begin to expect from
Absolutely.
Companies rather than demand.
It was clear in my work in advertising that they already are expecting it, but there's something very wrong with the company's trying to change, to adapt, to adopt a gloss of being altruistic are never going to be able to compete in the future with the ones that are founded on those principles and the companies that exist to further certain common goals. It'll be interesting to see which companies are still around in 100 years. I have a feeling there will be a lot of small companies founded by guys who got together for some common goal rather than the big Nestle's and the big companies like that.
Well, the shift will be interesting because in a sense, I mean, like, the first things that when the revival of this art, you know, artisanal scene is still, I mean, if you look at the financial factors, there's many that would prevent us from actually doing well because people are poor now. There's been essentially a gutting of the middle class, which has been crucial in the development of patronage, which is essential in what it is that, say, you do or I do. Now, despite those, I believe that individuals are just more willing to support more than ever because I think they see in the long term that the philosophy that we've created, at least for modern enterprises, is a kind of psychotic philosophy, and its results are psychotic. Like, I don't believe in a world of charity. I believe that if you have charity, then you're just merely trying to solve a problem that's systemic rather than solve the problem itself. And, and I honestly do believe that social enterprise is that solution, where I think the spirit of enterprise can be alive in something where you still do good.
Yes. And importantly, it makes branding a more authentic thing. You know, you don't have to go and pay 2 million euros to make an advertisement to attach some nice emotions to your brand by putting a sexy lady in there or a cute little gurgling baby. Your brand has emotion and meaning for the person by virtue of its existence and its cause. It's a more interesting space. And thankfully, the long tail of the internet now makes it possible for small little producers everywhere to sell their wares to whoever would like to buy them. It's a true revolution. Yeah.
Well, you know, you kind of wonder, is the brand becoming a new type of cuneiform, you know, to represent certain ideals? Is that sort of like the way that we're moving towards? And I think that at least the people who embody the principles of social enterprise, I think that they will be the ones to actually dictate for everyone else the way that we do business. And it's going to it's really going to be difficult, if not impossible, for these companies to play at being generous, being fucking charitable. I'm like, yeah, you do all these things, but look at the runoff. Like, you just your very existence is toxic.
Absolutely. Their superiority there is, it's based on their being able to offer better quality at more affordable prices. Over time, that's not going to be so easy for them to maintain that advantage. And then they will be forced, as you say, to stop playing at doing good and to start doing it for real. And maybe the better ones will survive. The more intelligent ones will become social enterprises.
One can only hope. And now you find yourself at the very beginning of trying to do something similar. Now, there's a number of ways that I think people can help you other than financial, I think.
Sure.
And the first and most obvious one is, I think that people should just check out. Well, there's going to be links in on the site, on the show, to because I want people to go and to like your company, to like the things you're doing. It plays a role. You know, we need to talk about it. And it just, your Kickstarter program ends in 3 days, but I hope that this isn't the last of what we begin, you know, to see. Like, this is just for you is trying to establish enough of a financial backing to be able to not just do this once.
Exactly. I mean, we would love this to run and run, and we hope it's not a one-trick pony. Like, I don't think these shoes are just a gag that's going to live for a few months and then become uninteresting. I mean, they're very good quality shoes, so hopefully we can keep this going. And yeah, the Kickstarter page will just pay for our first batch of shoes, and then we'll figure out in the aftermath, how have we done financially from that? Are we able to do a second batch? I'm pretty sure now we will be able to do that. And we'll have a website, a proper, fully functioning website a month from now, where people can buy the shoes in the old-fashioned way,
well,
without having to pay for them months in advance.
See, that sounds much more promising. So we know what we need people to do now. They need to go to your Kickstarter page. Which is in the links. And is there a specific link that we can give now, or is it too long of a link?
It's if you go to Kickstarter and search for Atheist Shoes.
Atheist Shoes. Excellent. So do that search. If you are too lazy to check the notes or go to the site, because it does sometimes load up slow, I'm trying to change that. But I want you to go there and to support them in any way that you can. Obviously, the best way to do that is to order one of those shoes. But there's lots of other ways that you can help as well. So please do that, and we'll be I'll probably hopefully be talking to you after the new site is up. We'll probably have a follow-up interview during one of the shows, so you can just let us know how it went, and where hopefully it'll also be available for them to have it there, because like I said before, I think that this idea is brilliant. It's the best way for us to be able to subtly let people know. I mean, it's better than the gaydar, trust me.
Yes, well, yes, and it's better than advertising, which only lasts for a few seconds, you know?
Exactly, yep. And think about what that means, too, to a person who just, they've never seen that shoe. They don't even know what atheism might be, and they just see that in the bottom of a shoe. And who doesn't want to read the bottom of a shoe? We all do.
Of course, yeah.
Well, it's a brilliant idea, David, and I'm going to be trying to give you as much support as I can Because I think that this is an important way in which we start to establish our, I don't want to say atheist culture, but, you know, like, I really have no other word for it.
Well, that's great. I'm so chuffed that you like it so much. And I would love to come back and tell you more. And hopefully the next time we talk, people will actually have their shoes. So we'll be able to get some customer feedback and they'll tell us, they'll decide, no one else, whether we have a business that will last. So it'll be interesting.
Well, yeah. Thanks for joining me on the show. Again, Atheist Shoes, check it out, everybody. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.